Sustainability isn't just about the environment, it's also about people, programs and practice. And when it comes to instructional coaching done well, sustainability can often be the difference between a coaching culture that thrives and one that quietly fades away. Hello and welcome to this episode of our special Instructional Coaching Done Well mini-series, where we're diving deep into what makes instructional coaching truly work in schools. I'm really excited about today's conversation because we're talking about something that doesn't always get the attention it deserves: sustainability. Inspired by Jim Knight's book, Evaluating Instructional Coaching, this episode is all about what it takes to build coaching programs that last. Coaching that's not a passing trend, but part of the fabric of school life. To help us unpack all of this, I'm joined by two brilliant guests. Maliva Tubbs, founder of the Instructional Coaching Collective, who's been at the heart of supporting coaches in a network of schools in Perth, Australia. And Av Swamy, senior consultant with Growth Coaching International, who brings a wealth of experience in helping schools embed a coaching culture. Together, we'll explore why sustainability often gets overlooked, the key role leadership plays, how to set coaches up for success, and how schools can create the conditions for instructional coaching to flourish long term. Maliva, you have enjoyed great success with the Instructional Coaching Collective. But why do you think sustainability in instructional coaching is often overlooked, even though it's crucial for long term success?
I think primarily coaching programs are incredibly complex, and they're complex for a number of reasons, and it really needs to be, they need to be carefully crafted and there are a lot of elements to consider to ensure its long-term success. And often principals are in quite a hurry. They're in the here and the now, and they really want to establish a coaching program really quickly without some foresight of planning and how to make sure that it's well-resourced and that it creates and maintains the momentum that it needs over time to sustain itself.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. With my own principal hat on, principals are very busy. Yes, absolutely. That's part of the job. But I love that phrase you use. They're very much in the here and now, probably because of the busyness. So whenever you're putting together or initiating maybe an instructional coaching program, a lot of it's around the here and now, which in many cases probably creates a scenario where looking down line, that long-term sustainability isn't maybe always an initial focus. From your experience, what are the biggest challenges schools face then in sustaining coaching programs over time?
Thank you. Maliva, I guess, picked up on a really good point about the complexity of the work to lead schools at the moment. The crowded agenda, the crowded improvement agenda, so much science that sits behind the way we teach and we learn these days. And really the challenge is trying to identify where to start, where to put our attention. And sometimes that does go into the here and now. And I think the challenge is getting up on the balcony and being able to see that long-term vision about what we're trying to achieve in our school. And helping the educators, the teachers in our classrooms improve practice, get better at what they do, so our students and our children get the best deal they possibly can.
Yeah, I love that phrase you use, a crowded improvement agenda. And that's very much what's facing all of our school leaders in schools, because ultimately you're in there to lead. You want to try and improve the outcomes for children in your school. That's ultimately the main goal. But as a result, you have very much a crowded improvement agenda. And I suppose through these podcast episodes and this mini-series working up towards this roadshow, is we're trying to convey, you know, the importance of sustainability. This is not just another lovely idea that would be great in my school, but it's going to require, you know, a lot of time, a lot of effort over the long term, which is what we hope to get across to our listeners in this particular episode. In Jim Knight's book, Evaluating Instructional Coaching, he notes that leaders don't always recognise the power they have in sustaining coaching programmes. Maliva, in your experience, what are some of the key actions school leaders can take to create a coaching culture that lasts?
That's a really good question. from my experience and having worked with some my own principal and principals across some networks of schools, I know that they are incredibly powerful in establishing and sustaining really successful instructional coaching programs. And I think they really need to be intentional about creating that coaching culture in schools and being really disciplined about that. So I think it actually starts with a really deep understanding of what instructional coaching is. And from that deep understanding, also understanding the types of support that your instructional coaches might need and the resourcing that goes into making sure that teachers can engage in that process as well. They also need to prioritise the instructional coaching program as part of their core business of the school. So if they see value in it, then they're going to constantly come back to that as part of their business plans and orientation. I think what's also core to this is evaluating an instructional coaching program as well from a lot of different viewpoints to ensure that what you're wanting to do with your program is actually achieving the outcomes that you want. They also really need to trust the people involved in the process. So they need to trust their instructional coaches. They need to trust the instructional champions in those schools and really relinquish that control so that they can get on with their own work and instructional coaches can get on with the work that they're doing and trust that they're doing a really good job with that. They are really influential also in picking the right people for the right job. So we need to have the right people doing the right job in coaching positions, and they are also influential in creating the processes and the structures around making an instructional coaching program feasible across the school. So I think overall, they need to understand also that it's about growth for coaches, for teachers, and to not lose sight of the ultimate goal, which is improving outcomes for students.
Yeah, that's been really helpful. I'm scribbling away here, Maleva, as you go through a lot of really, really useful points. So you use a couple of keywords in there for leaders who are listening in, being intentional and being disciplined. I think that's very helpful, being disciplined. And you talked about understanding the what, so getting their heads around the what of instructional coaching. But you mentioned a lovely phrase there, this needs to be part of our core business. You know, so go back to that, okay, overcrowded agenda, improvement agenda, this really needs to be part of our core business. You know, as the lead learners in the school, this needs to be right front and centre. But it's interesting, you mentioned the idea of ensuring that they pick the right people. And that's obviously key at the start of the process. And there's a lovely comment you made, Maleva, is that they need to be able to trust the coaches. And that's something that is easier said than done, to be able to relinquish control and hand over that trust to those coaches, because you mentioned also an important thing, Maleva, that the coaches need to grow as well. You know, when they come in at the start of the process, it's new to essentially everybody, but it's a big part of the leader's role to essentially help those coaches grow, provide an environment that encourages them to grow. So those are really, really helpful for the folks that are going to be listening in. Av, you've had the opportunity to work with many schools over the years as a consultant with GCI. What would you say in your experience then are the dangers of viewing instructional coaching as a short-term initiative? I'm sure some people do, rather than an embedded ongoing practice.
I wanted to really capture and pick up on and leverage off something Maleva just said around coaching is, I guess, the vehicle to move the what through the how into the why, you know, have students at the center and the core of what we do. Coaching can often be something that we pick off a shelf and is certainly a quick fix. There are so many people that talk to us as an organization about, or we do coaching. We talk about and position coaching as how we work, the conversations that we have and how we work. A really important element that I think in terms of one of those dangers of viewing instructional coaching as a short-term fix can often come down to an element where coaches are selected, kind of goes back to what Maliba was talking about. Coaches are selected because they are excellent teachers. And I guess when we think about Jim's work, we are actually looking for a certain skill set in our coaches to make that practice sustainable in our schools. I guess one of the dangers of viewing structured coaching is that short-term bolt-on piece is that we see real shifts, but shifts at a very much a surface level around teacher practice and improving that practice. And I guess when we make and a focus on making coaching, instructional coaching, a part of the way we work and an embedded part of school culture, we actually get opportunities to focus on that deep reflection, deep coaching, and therefore deep learning and a shift in practice that's meaningful, purposeful, and long-lasting. I guess when things are grabbed off the shelf as quick fixes, coaching can often feel like it's been done to people. And a really important element of the work of Growth Coaching International, the Instructional Coaching Group, is the real partnership approach and being alongside with others rather than things happening to people. So I think that's a really important element.
Yeah, there's a lot of fantastic, helpful points in there, Av. And your first comment was really to say, this is not something that's off the shelf. And off the shelf can be really appealing. Again, we go back to that idea of fast, busy lives that we lead as educators. And it's lovely to be able to lift things off the shelf. But ultimately, we're trying to embed this long term. And there's a lovely phrase you used of when you talk to school leaders or educators in general, quite often you'll get that response, oh, yes, we do coaching. Mm. And it means you think, okay, so what do you mean by we do coaching? And moving to your comment, it really needs to be a way of being and doing. It's not bolt on. It's not surface level. We're in this for the long game. You know, it's a long term initiative. And you used another key word there, Av, and that brings in the whole idea of partnership. That there needs to be a partnership running right the way through, and it's not just surface level. It's not a quick fix. You have to really invest the time and effort into this. Goes back to that phrase again. This is our core business, and if it's our core business, it warrants our attention and our time. So that's been really helpful for our listeners. A well-defined instructional coach's job or role description, okay, is a key factor in sustainability. Maliba, what should schools include in their coach role descriptions to set coaching programs up for this idea of long-term success?
So what we've learnt over sort of the course of 4 years is that people who are really interested in being an instructional coach really need a transparent role description. And I think you need to start with the big picture. So where does the instructional coach fit into the business plan of the school? How do we support outcomes for students? And what will that look like for me? So you're also looking for people who may not necessarily have the essential skills that an instructional coach needs, but they certainly need to be willing to develop those skills. So we know that for our coaches that, you know, communication skills are incredibly important, that they need to nurture those partnership principles. So you're looking for people who, you know, exercise humility, they're humble, they really want to see the best in others, they really want to support, they really want to work in partnership with others. So they need to demonstrate and give examples of how they actually do that. So there are real qualities that you're looking for, those sort of qualities that's what you're looking for in your instructional coaches. They also, in my experience, need to have a good understanding of high impact teaching strategies because they're supporting teachers in the classroom. And they need to have that in their toolkit. But they also need to be willing to grow in that area as well. So they also need to have, I guess, a good understanding of how adults actually learn, because when we're working with adults, it's a very different ball game to one compared to when you're working with students. So how adults learn with you, you really do need to have a good understanding of that. And they also need to acknowledge just what is that role going to entail? What sort of commitment am I required to do as part of my instructional coaching role? So that is, how much time will I spend in my instructional coaching role? How much time will I be given to do that? What might the supports look like in that particular role? How am I going to be supported in that role? And that, I think they also need to be open to having their practice evaluated. So as much as working with a teacher is non-evaluative, it's non-judgmental, there still has to be an element of evaluation so that we know that we think we've picked the right people for the role, but sometimes things can go awry and relationships can become unraveled. So we need to get that feedback. So I think coaches do need to be open to that. And they also need to have a really good understanding of how the impact cycle works and all of the strategies that go into that whole cycle, including, you know, the conversations, what a good conversation entails. Are they apt at collecting data to support teachers achieving those goals? And they also, I guess, really want to see themselves grow and also the people that they work with. They have to have a genuine want to see the best in others.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And it's interesting when you started your response there, Maliva, over the last 4 years, you know, so to give people an idea, you know, that you've been doing this now for 4 years and it's an ongoing learning process. You know, every year you're adding new things in, you're tweaking things, you're modifying things. So that gives people, I suppose, an idea of the sort of time investment to get to that stage. And, you know, over the next 4 years, the next 8 years and beyond, there will be continue to be a learning process for you folks, you know, certainly within the network. So that's really helpful. And it's interesting, you know, you make one of those points that the coach needs to have a really good grasp of high quality teaching. You know, what does good teaching look like? But equally, be still the sort of person who is keen to grow themselves and learn themselves. And I think that's a really important point to make as well. And above and beyond that, understanding how adults learn. So you're bringing people out of a role where they're spending the majority of their time educating students, you know, of a certain age, which is in many ways a different thing to educating and working alongside and partnering with adults. So that's a very, very important part of that as well. And being open to be evaluated in some shape or form is absolutely essential, so that whenever they're signing up for this at the start, this is going to be part and parcel of the whole process. You also mentioned an interesting comment there, Maliva, is, you know, yes, how much time is going to be given here to the coaching, but maybe even more importantly, what's the support going to look like for the coach? And that's a lovely segue into my next question for you. You've experienced from an instructional coaching trainer's perspective, okay? How do we ensure that new instructional coaches are not only well trained, that's important that we train them well, but also supported, as Maliva said, in their roles so that they don't feel either isolated or quite likely overwhelmed? What are your thoughts on that, Av?
I guess, you know, coaching like teaching can get isolating when we're working alone, and that ability to provide opportunities. Well, first of all, ensure that coaches in our schools are really connected with leaders and have really positive relationships, which are open in terms of communication, where coaches can feel like they can be connected in with. One thing that's really worked well is where we've seen, like, the Instructional Coaching Collective is a great example, where there's a leader of coaches in Maliva pulling coaches together as a network so that they are able to communicate, engage with one another, learn from one another, and not feel isolated, sharing practice and wisdom about what's worked and the challenges they might be facing. The idea of providing really targeted, meaningful and bespoke professional development for coaches that meets their needs and I guess fits or meets them where they're at in terms of their own journey. And I think that's been a real learning, I guess, over our experience working with clients all over the world, actually understanding what the coach's needs are and then tailoring professional learning to help meet that particular need and help extend, challenge and grow those coaches. One part of our work that we've been really involved in as an organisation, and I guess I can speak from a national perspective here in Australia, there is so much movement of staff across contexts, schools, systems. So planning for, I guess, the retention and the natural attrition of coaches over time and being able to bring that into our work to make sure that, yes, we're providing an opportunity to grow and develop coaches. And when they're successful, they move on to bigger and better things. But there's a plan in place to make sure that is sustainable. What we've embedded is sustainable over time. I think one thing that's on my mind, Richard, as we and Maliva, as we talk through this, is none of this is possible without that big R word, and that's resourcing to make sure that things are set up in a way that they're really well resourced and coaches feel like they've got time to connect and collaborate with others.
I think you're right. I mean, you mentioned the word resource and not just finance, because finance is important. And I mean, the majority of schools that I led, I inherited, you know, debt. That was just the scenario we were in. Like a lot of folks listening to this, but resourcing time as well. You know, and time is one thing that we can move around and play around with a little bit. It all depends on what we prioritize. Go right back to that idea of core business. If this is our core business, then we need to dedicate a certain amount of time to it. Interestingly, Av, you mentioned there, and this is important as well for listeners, being connected to the leaders. So the coaches that are coming into these roles, having a really good, strong connection between them and the leaders is really important. In an ongoing way, I would imagine, and you used that phrase, there needs to be open communication where you can talk about challenges, you know, if there is a feeling of isolation or whatever, those things can be addressed in many ways. And sometimes you have the privilege of having a leader of coaches, depends on the size of the school. But there are opportunities, I suppose, thinking outside of the box to connect with other schools. You might not necessarily be in a cluster or in a network, but I think there's real value in one coach connecting with coaches from other schools in other contexts. There's tremendous opportunity for learning and sharing of good practice in that particular scenario. The whole idea of succession planning, you're absolutely right. Schools change over time. People move to other schools, there's promotions, people retire, we're not here forever. So there's going to be changes in your staffing. So succession planning is really important and being able to plan for those changes that inevitably are going to happen down the line. And again, you know, you mentioned the whole idea of evaluating coaches. Maliva, I'd love to jump into that topic with you. And I'm going back again to Jim's book, Evaluating Instructional Coaching, which is a great book for folks to turn to. In that book, there is an emphasis on the need for sound program evaluation, and that's tied to coaching standards. And you touched on this a little bit in your last answer. What essentially does effective evaluation look like, and how can it contribute to program sustainability?
So for us, evaluation has played a really big part of establishing and maintaining our instructional coaching programs on a number of levels. And Jim's book on evaluating instructional coaching has played a big part in that, because it provides some really concrete and realistic tools that you can use to evaluate the effectiveness of coaching programs. So we've done that in a number of ways. So, and he looks at, and there's also another book, which is his Definitive Guide to Coaching, and he talks about those seven success factors of effective coaching. And what you're really doing is evaluating those factors that that evidence tells us sustains instructional coaching programs. So those seven elements are your partnership principles, using the impact cycle well, using data at several points throughout your instructional coaching program that coaches and schools are developing and using instructional playbooks, that we're developing those communication skills and habits in our instructional coaches, that you're getting support from leadership, but you're also getting that system support as well. So what you want to do is have the facility to be able to evaluate those things. And so that's where this book is really, really useful. So we evaluate a number of things. So at a school level, we evaluate the effectiveness of our coaches, and that involves a 360-degree evaluation of that coach. So it would be a self-evaluation, and the evaluation rubric looks at things like the partnership principle, using the impact cycle, using data to support teachers. So we've developed the rubric to suit our context. And that's worked really, really well. And on top of that, the coach also needs to know how well are they doing when working with the people that they coach. So we also collect data from our coaches, and coaches are able to view that data to inform their own goals for future coaching. And then we also have evaluation from a third party. So, for example, I will sit with the coach and we'll use a rubric and look at that coaching conversation and look at the points in the rubric and develop, if you like, we can evaluate the coaching together. So they're getting feedback from all of those angles in order to improve their coaching. So we use that data as the basis of providing that support for the coach. So they're not in a quandary as to where should I develop. They've got the data to show them exactly where it is they might need to grow. So we use it as a positive thing as well. This also ensures, I guess, that teachers are getting good quality coaching and that their experience with coaching is super positive. And so we know when teachers are coached well that they're likely to tell their peers that, you know, I've had a really fantastic coaching experience, and that definitely improves buy-in from all of our stakeholders. And we also find that when coaches get feedback about their coaching, they're more likely to stay in the role because you're still providing them with a platform to celebrate the things that they are doing really, really well, and helping teachers achieve really powerful goals is also something that they really, really value. They can see that progress. At the school administrator level, we also evaluate our program. So the principal has their own rubric to look at the effectiveness of the coaching, and that tells them about what's working well with the program. Do we need to change the way that we are doing things? What's working really well? Do we need more resourcing that perhaps needs to be focused in a particular area? And so that will shape the way that the instructional coaching. So our instructional coaching program will change from year to year depending on the feedback that we get from that. So as I said, there's a range of tools that you can use and are available to you, and I highly recommend them. And I guess the sorts of data that we're really interested in, which is really powerful when we're showing, you know, principals the efficacy of this program, is to look at things like what sort of goals are teachers setting? So is it about engagement? Is it about behavior? Getting kids, you know, improving attendance? So principals can actually see where the focus of that coaching is being placed, and we can also gauge the number of impact cycles that teachers are doing throughout the process. We can see how many teachers are actually engaged in the process, and we can see the sorts of teaching strategies that they're using and the types of data that we're collecting to help teachers improve. So there's a lot of powerful data that tells us whether or not the instructional program is actually delivering the goods, really.
That's helpful. And, you know, from what you're saying, that there's a real emphasis on the benefits of, you know, an effective way of evaluating this program. You know, there's huge benefits from this. It's not just a matter of, well, we'll bolt this on to the end just to make sure it's working okay. There's actually so much you can get from it. Your first comment, Maliva, was evaluation has played a major part in the sustainability of our coaching program. I mean, what more evidence do people need? You're 4 years in with this, and you're actually saying evaluation has played a major part in the sustainability of our coaching program. And you mentioned there, you know, the seven success factors. You know, where are we on each of these? And look at this, you know, in an annual review or whatever shape or form it takes, it's all evidence-based, which is really, really important. And it's a thorough process. You know, it's not a token gesture. It's a very thorough process, which again, I would imagine needs to be given a sensible amount of time to actually put that into place. And you finished off, and I think this is really helpful as well there, that the data produced by this process is extremely helpful to the school in general. So for principals and school leaders listening who see the importance of data in general, then the data produced from evaluating your instructional coaching program will actually be very, very helpful to the school in general, because it flags up a lot of positives, which is encouraging, but maybe shines a light sometimes on where some of the gaps are. And it's going to tell a bit of a story. And importantly there, maybe you said, and this is 4 years in, that your program then changes and adjusts accordingly, depending on what that data is and what is it. So that's going to be really, really useful for our listeners. Av, it's important that the voices of those involved shape and refine a school's instructional coaching program. We're thinking about the partnership principals in a previous episode. So there's voice in there right in the middle. What role does teacher and coach feedback play in keeping a coaching program relevant and impactful?
Richard, that piece around working in partnership with using Jim's approach across this whole series of podcasts talking about instructional coaching, we do things with people. We stand and sit alongside the knowledge workers and the professionals that we work with. And I guess when we're doing things with people, we really want to listen to those people who are experiencing the coaching and obviously therefore changes in their practice and the impact that that's having. Teachers, the feedback that we receive back for them really does play a significant role in the evaluation of the program. Things change often in schools. Students come and go, programs come and go, priorities shift, system initiatives shift. And I guess who better to listen to than the people on the ground that we're coaching who are in the classrooms with the students trying to improve their practice? That equal voice, that dialogue, that idea of opportunities to reflect together and that reciprocity of the whole process, I guess, is a real strength of the approach that we bring to instructional coaching. And when we're listening, we're able to make changes and be agile in the way that we work forward to ensure that the actual coaching program is meeting the needs of the teachers that we're working with. And also new teachers that might come into the fold as we kind of go through a school year as well.
You mentioned a really key word there, Av, and thank you for that. We partner with people, you know, and I think that's lovely to have that come through very, very clear and central to what we're talking about. We're talking about partnership. So we're partnering with people. And you mentioned there, you know, through that process, it's a dialogue. So there's that backwards and forward sharing of knowledge and information, and it's an opportunity for reflection in the whole process. I mean, we're picking out the partnership principles one by one here almost, which is terrific. And you mentioned that idea then for the need to be and the open to be agile in the programs that you run and adjust them accordingly. And I think you're going to get more buy-in. You talked about voice, you know, from those who are actually involved in delivering this, that if they feel they have a voice, then you're going to get a lot more buy-in. And that comes right back just to the whole idea for the whole school and school community to think about this is a partnership. So a core part of our business is partnership. And I think if folks take that approach, I think they're going to go a long way and have, you know, significant impact on the young people in their in their school buildings, which is ultimately why, you know, we're putting this in place.
That's what sets our work aside and really stands out, to ensure that we are working with people. We're not doing things to people. It's about the way we show up, the way we interact with others, the way we listen, the way we take on their feedback and respond to their needs. I think it's what really differentiates our approach to instructional coaching. And I really think that's a strength of the way that we work as instructional coaches in our space.
Yeah, and I'm glad you've brought that up, Av, because, you know, ultimately, you know, through this mini series, that's what we want to convey to our listeners. You know, this is how we go about instructional coaching. This is ultimately instructional coaching done well, which is a theme for the roadshow, but the theme for our work in general, which is really helpful. So thanks for bringing that to our attention. Maliva, as you know only too well, teacher retention, we've touched on this a little bit, is an issue in many parts of the world, not just Australia, right around the world, and is often linked to a sense of purpose and professional growth. How can schools create conditions where instructional coaches feel valued, but also challenged and ultimately motivated to stay? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it comes down to, number one, listening to our coaches. So listening to what they need to do their job well, what they need to grow as coaches, and they need, just like a teacher wants a peer's goal, something that's powerful, something that's emotionally compelling, something that's really going to make a difference to them. I think coaches need that opportunity to do that as well. So in that, if they set themselves a challenging goal and they achieve that goal as a coach, I believe it's going to, you know, want them to get better at what they do. And to value and to really value our coaches, we need to tell them they're doing a great job. So sometimes we do need to have that evaluative stance to say, as an instructional coach, you're pretty amazing. And we really value the work that you're doing in the school. So I know we're not supposed to be judgmental, but I think sometimes we just need to be on some occasions. And also for them to be part of that data process so that they know they can actually see the impact that they're making. So, you know, I like to share data. We have a collective space, so we have a Teams space. We share and we enter all of our goals in there. We enter all of the data that we're using for teachers to achieve goals, and we're also looking at the strategies that teachers use to do that. So all of that just doesn't happen by itself. It happens by our coaches who work incredibly hard. So being able to see that data and the impact that they're making in a transparent way, I think, is a really good way of keeping them motivated and working in the job.
Yeah, that's helpful. And but ultimately, listening to our coaches and valuing our coaches, I mean, all of us, you know, respond so well to encouragement. You know, we think about the pupils we teach in our classes, and ultimately we want to encourage them. And it's the same for our coaches in our coaching programs. We want to, first of all, listen to them. So we've got back to what Av said, that idea of open communication, which is really important. But like you say, Maliva, being able to value our coaches is really, really important. And taking the opportunity, as Tim would say, to shine a light on what's going well. And there are a lot of things going well in our schools, and we need to take the opportunity, particularly for leaders who are listening, to really shine a light on what's going well. And again, you know, where you might have one person as a leader of coaches or in a role like that, being able to share the data in a celebratory way, you know, being able to say, listen, look at what we're actually achieving here. Being able to step back and look at that. And it's interesting, Maliva, you talked about, you know, instructional coaching needs to be emotionally compelling. I love that phrase. We're thinking about our peers' goals as coaches and working with teachers. You know, we need something that's emotionally compelling. But the whole instructional coaching process needs to be emotionally compelling. And where you have a school, I would imagine, where instructional coaching is being done well, the level of, you know, emotional compelling work that's going on will retain teachers. Teachers will want to work in that school where that is a priority. I go right back to the original comment. This is part of our core business. And when it comes to teacher retention, if your school has instructional coaching done well as part of its core business, then teacher retention will be less of an issue, I would imagine, in your school than it would be in another school. As we wrap up this conversation, Av, if I can come to you, if a specific school, maybe a whole district, wanted to start today, so they're listening to this podcast episode, we've got them all fired up with enthusiasm, and they want to make their coaching program more sustainable, what would you say is the best first step that they should take?
Look, I think, just the open reflectiveness around, those seven key success factors that Jim outlines in the Definitive Guide to Instructional Coaching is a really, really great place to start. Where do we sit along a continuum, against each of those success factors, and identify, what might be a first small step we can take. But before doing that, I think to leverage off the last response from both Maliva and yourself there, Richard, leveraging off what's working well. Where are we going well against the seven success factors? And what might be our next step? I think that would be a really great place to start. And then finally, looking at ways that collectively we can continue to build on developing the right, and I use that term really purposefully, the right professional culture that they want in their school or in their district. How do we actually want to be working together? And then making sure that we sort of wrap up and go back to those ways of being, ways of doing, ways of thinking as we kind of move forward through the journey.
Yeah. I think that's really helpful, Av, and it's a lovely place to conclude. So for folks who are listening in, essentially going back to those seven success factors. And we have a separate episode in this mini series where you can look at those seven success factors. And you asked a question there, it was a very, very useful reflective question. Where do we sit in each of these or relative to each of these seven success factors? Identify what's going well, shine light on what's going well. And from that information, choose what's the best next step within those seven success factors. And again, to reiterate the fact that it's very much an ongoing process. And Maliva's here talking about, looking over the last 4 years. There are folks out there that have been looking at this over 10, 14, 15 years, and they're still going back to the seven success factors to say at the end of each school year, what's going really, really well? Let's shine a light on it. And let's look at what we need to identify for improvements for next year, which I think has been really, really helpful for our listeners. Av and Maliva, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this very important topic of sustainability. What really stands out for me is that sustaining instructional coaching isn't about quick fixes or grand gestures. It's about paying attention to the small and often invisible things that make people feel valued, supported, and part of something that matters. Go back to that idea of core business. Sustainability doesn't happen by accident. It happens when leaders are intentional about culture, clarity, connection, and care. For our listeners, I'm sure this conversation has inspired you to think a little bit more about the sustainability of the instructional coaching program in your setting. If you find this episode helpful, why not share it with a colleague or a leader in your network? And of course, pay a visit to both growthcoaching.com.au and instructionalcoaching.com for more resources and insights into instructional coaching done well. And finally, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, if you're listening in Australia and want to find out more about the roadshow events in June 2025, check out the GCI website for more details.